Very excited about pursuing this project, which has been aided by the California Institute for Regenerative Medicine. So working with Kat and also Dennis, it's been a pleasure. But this is a very intriguing molecule, the ROR1 antigen. This is the ROR1 protein, was discovered by a screen for the cells, proteins that had kinase-like structure. ROR1 is the type 1 tyrosine kinase-like protein, and you can see that it's expressed primarily in embryogenesis, and this expression is quite marked during embryogenesis, which is very interesting, and there are a lot of developmental biologists trying to figure out the exact role of this protein. But in relevant to this talk, the expression of ROR1 appears to attenuate rapidly in fetal development, such that even by term, you actually have loss of expression of ROR1 by many tissues. And importantly, it's not apparently expressed on hematopoietic stem cells, as shown by these analyses here. However, some years ago, we identified patients who were immunized with their own leukemic cells in a strategy where we tried to use active immunization to induce an anti-leukemia immune response, that some patients developed an anti-sera that reacted with their own leukemia cells and those of others. When we interrogated the antigen, this was ROR1, and that led us to develop monoclonal antibodies and try to do a tissue screen. And as seen here, this antigen is not expressed on adult tissues of a variety of different sources. We have been able to identify a rare subpopulation of B cells, more commonly seen in pediatric kids who are recovering from myeloablative chemotherapy, called hematogones, and they have a peculiar feature, and they've been described in literature, but they represent less than 0.25% of B cell populations. The thing about this is that it's expressed on CLL, chronic lymphocytic leukemia, the most common leukemia, and the leukemia that I've spent a lot of my career working on. This leukemia actually, if you look at the screen of over 800 patients, you can see that it's expressed on nearly all cases. We have identified a rare subpopulation of CLL patients which have immune phenotypic features otherwise similar to CLL that lack expression of ROR1, and we're interrogating that population now with both array data and transcriptome analysis and looking at splice isoforms, and we're finding that this subgroup of patients is quite peculiar, has a distinctive transcriptome signature that's distinct from ROR1 positive leukemia, and we're looking at clinical data as well as other features, but it might be a subtype of leukemia that's previously not been recognized. But suffice it to say that the bulk of patients will express ROR1, and that attracted our attention to try and figure out its function as well as to interrogate whether we could manipulate this for therapy. One of the things that's apparent is that when you silence ROR1, as this experiment, you can do this with shRNA. You actually enhance the rate of spontaneous apoptosis of leukemia cells. And leukemia cell lines that have been generated that lack expression of ROR1, when we introduce ROR1, we actually can enhance the rate of proliferation and the robustness in vitro culture. So the expression of ROR1 appears to be playing a biologic role in this leukemia. So to interrogate this further, we developed a transgenic mouse model using ROR1 here under control of an Ig promoter enhancer, the EMU enhancer. This would drive expression of ROR1 in B cells, so we'd have B cell restriction expression of the human ROR1 antigen. And you can see here that the transgenic mice that express ROR1 have low-level expression of the ROR1 as seen here over this dotted line, whereas the littermate controls that lack the ROR1 transgene remain ROR1 negative. Now, what was surprising to see is that over time, these animals developed a CLL-like condition, in that they had cells which are expressing higher levels of ROR1, and you could see that these leukemic cells became monoclonal and developed into a CLL condition very late in life, and so the introduction of constitutive expression of ROR1 appears to be able to drive the expression of the leukemia in these animals. And what's intriguing is that when we see this, we oftentimes see an enhancement of the level of ROR1 expressed on those leukemic cells. This is not seen in the control littermates. Now, there's another transgene which has been used in studies, and this is the TCL1 transgene identified by Carlo Croce to drive leukemogenesis in T-cell leukemias, but more recently studies with him and that he's conducted and we've done in collaboration have shown TCL1 to play a very important role in driving also B-cell leukemia, in particular CLL. And in studies where he developed a transgenic mouse that overexpresses this TCL1 transgene in B cells, these animals also develop a CLL-like disease. It happens at about 9 to 12 months of age, sometimes a little bit later. But what we noticed that we wanted to do was to cross the ROR1 transgene with the TCL1 transgenic mice. And you could see here that this actually juices up the development of the leukemia such that we have development of leukemia at earlier time points, as seen here. And we're trying to interrogate the reason for this. It seems to be working at least in an additive, not synergistic fashion with TCL1. And this could be seen here that the rate of leukemogenesis in Linnermay controls that have just the TCL1 transgene versus ROR1 and TCL1, that you have higher rates of leukemogenesis that are occurring in these animals, which is not seen in Linnermay controls which lack the ROR1 transgene. And what's exciting here is that you can actually use this as a model system. You can transfer these leukemia cells into adoptive recipients, and these cells which express the ROR1 can very aggressively be transferred into a virgin recipient mouse, a younger syngeneic mouse, and you can then recapitulate the disease of leukemia, develop lymph node enlargement, splenomegaly, and leukemia. And that allows for a model system to observe some of the events that you can use to try and thwart this engraftment with the introduction of therapeutics. And you can see here that the ROR1 by TCL1 transgenic leukemia, if you engraft equal numbers of cells into virgin recipients, it forms a much more vigorous splenomegaly and engraftment than just the TCL1 transgenic leukemia shown here versus control mice. So this transfer is aided by the expression of ROR1. Now, what is ROR1 doing? Well, ROR1 leukemia is, you know, here described as a CLL cell. We consider a stem cell niche, if you will. You cannot grow these leukemic cells in the laboratory because it seems to have an orchestrated niche. It involves a number of accessory cells and signaling molecules, including the CD44, as was the topic of the previous talk. But ROR1 is also one of these survival stimulation factors, which it can derive from help from stromal cells, and we identified that ROR1 can bind WNT5A and allow for non-canonical WNT signaling into CLL and other cell types. And so this type of interplay is very important, and when we looked at anti-sera from patients who made antibodies against ROR1, we noted that not all but some patients had antibodies that can apparently block this survival stimulation with the microenvironment, and therefore we reasoned that some but not all antibodies to ROR1 would have biologic activity. So based on that, we set upon to develop a number of antibodies. We generated over 70 different monoclonal antibodies. We only found one that actually had this biologic activity. This was the D10 antibody, which had a relatively low affinity. Here's a Kinexa measurement compared to other antibodies we generated, which had higher affinities in the nanomolar concentration. But just to say that the affinity of the antibody, even the isotype of the antibody, is not sufficient to govern biologic activity, because when you engraft the leukemic cells, you see this D10 had biologic activity, whereas the 4A5, which also bound to the same ROR1 antibody, appeared not to be active in this regard. So we reasoned this was the right stuff, and what we did under the auspices of the California Institute of Regenerative Medicine is to generate a epitope mapping to define the epitopes, and we were able then to generate some recombinant antibodies that had even higher affinity. So based on our lead compound, which is the D10, we generated antibodies which bound to the identical epitope. This is the 961, which we termed trimtuximab in deference to the serum. And this had higher affinity for the ROR1 than D10, and was also able to block leukemic cell engraftment in this mouse model system, similar to the lead D10 antibody. Another model system that we're developing that Tina Wu here has perfected is the engraftment of human leukemic cells into an immune-deficient mouse. And when she does this, she's able to show that the administration of the antibody is very effective in clearing leukemic cells. But these mice are also introduced with cord blood cells that allow for engraftment of B cells and T cells, a model system that Kat Jamieson has used and has been very much perfected to allow for reconstitution of the human immune system in these animals. And you can see that the engraftment of B cells and T cells is not affected by the treatment with the anti-ROR1, but the leukemic cells are cleared by this treatment. So when we looked at this, we were looking at other things in literature, and there's another group at NIH that's developed some antibodies against ROR1, and they noted curious reactivity with adipose tissue and pancreatic islet cells. So we were doing tissue screens to look at the cross-reactivity, if you will, of this antibody with a number of tissues. We're doing this both in-house and outsourcing it with FDA-approved panels. And we found, to our surprise, actually, the antibody cirmatuximab did not react with these different tissues, which is actually quite reassuring because it does react with ROR1-positive lymphomas, in this case a mantle cell lymphoma, as well as CLL. So it seems to be highly specific. And so what we did is set upon to humanize this using this technique, which it's kind of curious that academia is doing this, but we are helped by the Serum grant. So we were able to generate a fully humanized antibody, which we've now termed cirmatuximab, which is now a humanized antibody both in its constant region as well as its variable region. Now, the reason for some excitement, too, is that it may have other applications besides just in leukemia. We've been interested in looking at this antigen and its expression, and it's apparent in studies that just recently published, some of the studies are commented down here, is that it's expressed not only in CLL but in a variety of different human cancers, breast, lung, ovarian, colon, pancreatic, skin, testicular, bladder, and uterus. It seems to have a very broad distribution, even though the normal tissue counterpart lack expression of the ROR1. And this is to describe, this is very strong expression of ROR1, moderate expression of ROR1, and less expression of ROR1. We're trying to actually interrogate the significance of that, but we wanted to focus on one tumor in particular, breast cancer, and we've looked now at others. But in breast cancer, it seems that the ROR1 was expressed on more aggressive tumor subtypes. With higher grade histology. And when we looked at breast cancer cell lines, this is just a heat map showing the relative expression of ROR1 on these various cancer cell lines. You can see that some of these cell lines express very high levels of ROR1 and some very little, if at all, negative, I would say. And what's interesting is that these cancer cell lines typically are associated with derivatives from the luminal type breast cancer. These have low metastatic potential and slower growth properties. And shown here, this is the fluorescence histogram showing that basal cell type breast cancer cell lines express higher levels of the ROR1. So we went back and looked at this, and we interrogated already available gene expression database, and we looked for the expression of ROR1, and we divided the ROR1 expression levels into tertiles because we figured that we wanted to extrapolate what the expression of a high level ROR1 was going to be associated. And to our surprise, in looking at a number of databases, we found that when the breast cancer expressed high levels of ROR1, it was associated with very high rates of metastatic relapse disease in general, relapse to the lung, brain, and bone. And, you know, this is very important because 90% of cancer deaths are related to metastasis. And so ROR1 appears to be associated with more metastatic disease. Now, one of the factors that this is still being debated at the ACR I just came from, there are tenets of people who buy into this epithelial-mesenchymal transition. I know I had a long discussion with John Dick. He has some issues with this, but I think it's a very interesting model where cells which have epithelial-type characteristics usually are sessile and forming a tissue, but they have to generate these mesenchymal characteristics that allows them to migrate and then to home to different distal sites and then to set up another site where they may have to dedifferentiate back again into the epithelial stage to then form a metastatic focus. This involves a number of transcription factors and proteins. So we look back on this, and here's the database. This is the database that was published here. And we looked at the expression of some of these mesenchymal and epithelial markers, and we see some of the transcription regulators as well as the mesenchymal markers are very much upregulated in the ROR1 positive cells, but the epithelial markers are downregulated compared to the ROR1 negative. And so there appeared to be a dichotomy. This is on the data from the primary breast cancer cells. So we went back to the cell lines and we looked at this and we found that those cell lines which expressed ROR1 had high level expression of mesenchymal markers, including transcription factors, SNL1 and SNL2. They asked very low levels of some epithelial cytokeratins. But when we knock down ROR1 with shRNA, we found that we can reverse the phenotype. Those cells that were mostly mesenchymal in some of the expression of these genes now switch to a more epithelial expression that helped to change their morphology from a more stellate type shape to a more cuboidal form, as well as lower the expression of things such as vimentin, which is very important in the mesenchymal state, down lower with the silencing, as well as e-cadherin, which actually went up when you silence the ROR1. And this actually affected the cell's biology because the cells that were silenced for ROR1 now lost ability to migrate in vitro as well as to invade matrigel. So invasiveness is also markedly reduced. This is not just one cell line, but a number of different cell lines. And actually, parenthetically, when we introduced the ROR1 into cell lines which lack this, they seem to acquire characteristics. So it seemed like both necessary and sufficient. ROR1 is playing a role in some of this transition. And it also downregulates some very important chemokine receptors. This is CXCR4 when we silence ROR1. Well, we would anticipate then that might have less migratory capacity to various tissues. So we wanted to examine this, and we looked at cells which were either ROR1 positive, the parent type, or silenced for ROR1. And we did this in a way to take compensate for the fact that ROR1 silenced cells did have a slower growth potential, but it was the primary site here. Could still form primary tumors. And we extracted the tumor when it reached a certain size. So the size was identical. This meant a two-week delay in the excision. And what we did was we started the clock ticking at this time point for these animals and at this point for these animals. So there was at least a two-week delay in registering for metastatic disease from an orthotopic xenograft. And when we did this, we found that the animals that had the wild-type tumor had disease that's wildly metastatic to the lung and other tissues, as shown here, with bioluminescence. And you can see the histology at 21 days after removal of the primary tumor, a lot of metastatic foci and a marked inhibition of metastatic development in the animals with ROR1 silencing. Now, I don't have time, but studies which we had done to look at this where you inject cells either intravenously to look at the ability to set up colonies in the lung, this is shown here. The ROR1 silenced cells had markedly reduced. This is in a log scale here. And this is seen even very early on. For example, even at day one and day three, you could see metastatic foci forming after intravenous injection of the wild-type tumor, and you don't see this in the silenced tumor, and you could see that they're very much impaired in developing metastatic disease. And we also see this by interjection of the cells into cardiac chambers, which allows for an arterial type of delivery, where we can look at the development of bone metastasis. And these cells that are silenced for ROR1 practically cannot develop bone metastasis, but the wild-type tumor is very aggressive in developing bone metastatic disease. So we look back on our D10 antibody, which we're trying to develop for treatment of leukemias, and we saw that this can affect the expression of ROR1, causes rapid down modulation of the ROR1 antigen, which by confocal microscopy seems to affect some internalization of the antigen and then eventual degradation. But what's interesting is that you see co-association of some of the mesenchymal antigens, which are associated with the mesenchymal state, including vimentin. This is a co-immunoprecipitation study. And that actually the degradation of ROR1 with the antibody results in degradation and loss of some of these mesenchymal features. So we're affecting a phenotypic change in the biology of the tumor. And that's reflected also similar to the ROR1 silencing with the antibody. We can actually inhibit the migration and the invasiveness of the cells when we treat with the antibody. And this is also seen in vivo when we inject cells and then treat the animals with antibody into developing pulmonary metastases. And so this is shown here again, looking at bioluminescence, and we can see marked inhibition of development of metastatic disease with the introduction of the lead compound D10 antibody. So we think that this is a very intriguing strategy, that it may actually be helpful. We're intrigued by what role ROR1 is playing in the developmental niche, and there's a lot of discussion about cancer stem cells and the role that they have in this niche, and if we can attack some of the features that keep the stem cell alive and also develop features that allow the cancer cell to spread to various sites of the body, we could have a very effective way of trying to mitigate the propensity for metastasis, which is really a very important problem in cancer biology. So I want to thank a number of workers who have worked on this, the postdocs and Christina Wu for her work with the mice and Bing, and also the serum project led by Dennis and Kat has been tremendous. And so I really want to thank the California Institute for Regenerative Medicine for this. Thank you very much.